Everyone, it's such a joy to have you here with us today and to see all your bright, beautiful, shining lights out there. Truly, each of you and each of us is God in expression in our own unique way. And when we come together, that light inside of us is just magnified and spills out into the world, ever brighter. At Unity Renaissance, we hold the vision for, together, a spiritually awakened world, living in peace, love, and joy. And we do our work toward achieving that vision through our mission, which is, together, we transform lives that transform the world. Let's begin our transformation work today in prayer. I invite you to take a deep breath in. And as you release, let go of your busy morning, any hurrying to get here, any distracting thoughts or concerns. And just allow yourself to relax into the presence of Spirit, here with you, in you, and as you. Know that you are in your right and perfect place, that you are here by divine appointment to both give and receive blessings. In this moment, we just feel the great rightness of being here now and being in spiritual community together. So we bless each and every soul here and all those to whom we are connected as we radiate our light out into the world to make a difference. Always aware of our unity of purpose and our oneness in spirit. And for these many blessings and the joy of being together today, beholding the Christ in one another, we are so grateful. And so it is. Amen.
That was fun.
Well, few words ignite more excitement in the human heart than the word freedom. So I'd like you to think back for a few moments to when you were a child and how it felt when school ended, at the end of the school year, right before summer vacation. Is that glorious or what? Or maybe you can remember back how it felt when you first got your driver's license, or when you graduated from college, when you moved out from living with your parents. Perhaps you can recall how it felt when you left a job or a relationship that really wasn't working for you. Or maybe remembering when you finally summoned the courage to speak your truth and to be who you truly are. In each of these circumstances, we have a wonderful sense of freedom. Freedom is a glorious experience. And freedom releases the energy of spirit in us. And I think our founding fathers must have known this on some level, because they built the ethic of freedom so deeply into the foundation of our country, not only through the passage of the Declaration of Independence to set us as an independent country, but also 15 years later, approving the Bill of Rights to assure personal freedoms. And in those first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution, they guaranteed such rights as freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, and on, but at the top of that list, the very first one, was freedom of religion. The very first amendment to the U.S. Constitution began with these words: Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, when we read that, and even when we think about freedom of religion, I think quite often we focus on the second half of that, about the free exercise of religion. So we think about our ability and our freedom to choose whether we want to be Christian or Buddhist or Muslim or whatever it might be, or to be none of those. We think about it as the freedom to exercise our own religious choice. But we often overlook the first part of that amendment, which is equally, if not more important, well, equally important, but often overlooked. Because in that opening statement, that first clause, the founding fathers were making the watershed decision to not establish a single religion as the one for the United States of America. In other words, they were saying this will not be a Christian nation per se or any other specific religion. And in fact, they put that wall right in there between church and state to separate the two, sending the very clear message that government was not meant, nor was it going to, interfere or be involved in religion. So this in itself was a revolutionary decision. It was completely different than what had happened 150 years earlier. So if you look at our Puritan fathers back in the early 1600s, as they were settling New England, they too envisioned an America that was a haven for religious freedom, but at the same time, they wanted to establish America as a Christian nation. Now, that's kind of an interesting thing to get your head around. I think it was a matter of they wanted to be free from England, and so they wanted freedom of religion in that regard. But then once they got you to New England, it was like, now you're going to practice the way we want you to. Now, our chosen type of Christianity will be the religion. And so in 1639, they actually approved the organization of Connecticut as a Christian state. And they established their own congregational church as the official religion of the state of Connecticut. And the same for Massachusetts. And in saying that it was the official religion of the state, that meant that it was supported by tax dollars and defended by the somewhat coercive arm of the government. Well, that's very different than how the founding fathers saw things 150 years later in the late 1700s. Because they didn't want this to be any particular religion. They didn't want to be involved in that. And in fact, they really wanted religious beliefs and practices to be left to the free and open marketplace. So there could be the sharing of ideas. Just let it be and see where it takes people. That's not ours to do. Well, I mention this because I think that it is so relevant to some of the discussion that we hear today. Perhaps you have heard someone assert that the founding fathers were devout Christians who felt that this should be a Christian nation. Well, I think when people say that, they're really thinking of the Puritans in the early 1600s. They're not thinking of the founding fathers who really established the laws for this nation as a whole. It was a very, very contentious issue, but it was quite clear when this country was established that religion and government would be kept separate. And not only that, but if we look at the founding fathers, they weren't all of the same religion. They weren't all practicing the same Christianity even, and they were really quite an eclectic bunch. Really would be fun to know them. So there were Unitarians and deists and independent thinkers, Congregationalists. There were various sects of Christianity represented there. And so compared to the Puritans, the founding fathers were very daring and open-minded and even outspoken. And many of them did not hesitate to speak about their doubts and their criticism and their concerns about organized religion. So one of those that we are most familiar with is Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson derided the churchmen, as he called it. But at the same time, he revered Jesus as the master philosopher and teacher. And some of the things that he said, I think people would be a little shocked by today. So here's one that stood out for me. Jefferson wrote that the religion builders have distorted and deformed the doctrines of Jesus. And then you're familiar with his Jefferson Bible, that he cut out his favorite sayings of Jesus and pasted them in his own document, which became the Jefferson Bible. And he said that this Bible was proof, he said, that I am a real Christian. That is to say, a disciple of the true doctrines of Jesus. We might say that Jefferson was most interested in the teachings of Jesus rather than the teachings about Jesus. So it would seem, right? And of course, that's what we say about unity as well. That we're more focused on what the teachings of the master were and how we apply those in our lives. But Jefferson, back in the late 1700s, by saying these things, he was really sort of seeding what I see as the evolution of independent thinking into not just religious freedom, but spiritual freedom. So here's how I distinguish that. If you look back at when religious freedom was first established, the original conception, I believe, or just the way people thought in those days, was this was about choosing which organized religion you were going to be a part of. It would be this or that. But spiritual freedom is much more multifaceted and diverse. Spiritual freedom says that we all have the right to be independent thinkers who create and follow our own spiritual path. And this is certainly the mode of operation for those who say they are spiritual but not religious, which would probably include many of the people in this room. And we spiritual seekers, what we like to do is just kind of mix and match from different spiritual traditions. So we will take some of the, you know, some from column A, some from column B, and put it all together. We're looking for the things that speak to our own heart, that help us tune into the divinity within. We each have our unique brand of spirituality. And so as we do this, as we pick and choose, we start to see things manifesting in our world, such as people going to a Buddhist meditation and reading Sufi poetry and studying the Hebrew Bible. Or we might see someone walking the labyrinth while praying the rosary at a Unity Church, and then go to a oneness blessing. And then in the evening, get together with a study group that's looking into the Bhagavad Gita. Fun, huh? This is what we do. We mix it up in our search for truth. And in the process, not only do we grow in our understanding, but we begin to create more awareness of world religions. And we pave the way for greater compassion and oneness in our world. So spiritual freedom is a little more wide open than religious freedom. Spiritual freedom encourages us to ask questions. So many of you have told me about times in your past that you attended a different church or you were raised in a different faith, and you began asking questions. And that was a problem. And as soon as you did, you were invited to maybe worship elsewhere or maybe stop asking questions, whatever it might be. But spiritual freedom means we have the freedom to ask questions. We have the freedom to say yes or no to what does or doesn't work for us. And we have the freedom to change our minds. And so each of us has that invitation to decide for ourselves what we believe about God and Jesus and good and evil, life and death, heaven and hell. It's an individual thing. We find our own way. So this is very much what Unity believes and what we were founded on, this idea that each person has a right to their own individual spiritual path. We applaud that. We encourage it and we honor it. And so even though we say that we most follow the teachings of Jesus, we also integrate teachings of other spiritual masters. That we honor that truth shows up in many different ways. And similarly, you'll find in a service sometimes that we'll sprinkle in wisdom or quotes from different faiths. And we say to people, if this doesn't work for you, what you find here, find something that does. Because everyone deserves to have their own spiritual path that brings them closer to the awareness of God within. And so we say, as I often do at the opening of the service, we honor all paths to God, we honor all names for God, we honor all expressions of God. And in so doing, we're very much like the founding fathers that wanted this free and open interplay of ideas and practices related to religion, spirituality, and personal growth. So at Unity, we eventually arrive to what we would consider the ultimate spiritual freedom. the ultimate spiritual freedom, which is your ability and your right to choose how and what you think about any given set of circumstances. It is your ability to choose your perception, your ability to pay attention to your mind and shift to a different way of seeing things. And what we say is that when we do that, and I know you've all experienced this, when we do that, everything changes. Our lives can be transformed like that, simply by seeing it differently. If you've ever had the experience of just being sure things were one way, you got locked in, you got the story going, you're on automatic pilot, and then suddenly you're like, wait a minute. Oh no, that I was wrong on that. This is what it is. Or maybe we consciously opened ourselves to another view, and the picture changed entirely. We have that incredible creative ability in us to lift ourselves up and see from a higher perspective. And this is the heart of Jesus' approach and his teachings, because he wanted so much to bring people up to a higher level of consciousness. He wanted them to be able to see in a different way, and he knew that it would change their lives. And so we see this, for example, in the parables in particular, when he would intentionally throw in a little surprising twist there. You know, people would be going along thinking, oh, I know how this is going to play out. And then, boom, the unexpected would happen. It was how he got their attention. Let me show you how to see this completely differently than how you're thinking. So, for example, you think a Samaritan is an outcast? Ha! Watch while I show you how a Samaritan can be a hero. You think a son who squanders his father's inheritance should never be forgiven? Let me show you how he can be a role model. You believe that you should hate your enemies? I tell you to love them. Shifting our perception. This is fairly easy to do when it's something simple. Have you ever had somebody say to you, well, are you seeing the glasses half empty or half full? Well, yeah, you can go, oh, yes, of course, it's half full. But when it gets to the bigger things in life, when we suffer a personal tragedy, a devastating loss, even when we're facing our own mortality, it's much more difficult. And yet, simply by shifting our awareness and our perception, we can find a place of peace around whatever is going on. My favorite example of this is Viktor Frankl, who wrote the classic best-selling book, Man's Search for Meaning. How many of you have read that? Everyone should read that book. It's not an easy read. It's a painful read. But it's so worth it, because the insights can be life-changing. So Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist who was in the concentration camps in Nazi Germany. And he wrote later about his experiences there in great detail. And as you read that book, you feel this incredible heartbreak, but also heart opening, because he chronicles in there in the most riveting way the daily injustices, the heartbreak of inhumanity to human beings. And he talks about the daily beatings. For just the slightest reason, you're standing wrong. Bam. He talked about the pervasive hunger. Every day they had, for their entire day's meal, all of their food in one day was 5 ounces of bread and a pint of very thin soup. So they were starving. And as they would go out to do their work at the work sites, you know, digging trenches and building things for the Nazis, they would go out into the freezing cold snow, dressed in rags, obviously no body fat left on them, and with shoes, if they had shoes at all, that were torn, too small, wet, and falling apart. And so he experienced typhus and frostbite, and every day witnessed death around him. And yet, he tells the story of how one very early morning before dawn, he and his group of prisoners were walking out to the work site that they were supposed to do the digging, and they were walking on very rocky, wet, cold terrain. And he said suddenly he looked up, and he saw the stars beginning to fade from the night sky. And he saw the first pink streaks of dawn finding their way across the sky. And suddenly he had the clearest vision of his wife's face, her smile, her encouraging look. And he said it was more luminous than the sunrise. And in that moment, he had a transcendent awareness of what could carry him through virtually anything. And it was love. It was his ability to choose where he put his focus. And he writes, "I grasped the meaning of the greatest secret that human poetry and human thought and belief have to impart. The salvation of man is through love and in love. I understood how a man who has nothing left in this world still may know bliss, be it only for a brief moment, in the contemplation of his beloved." He created within his own mind an inner sanctuary where he could commune with the spirit of his wife. He thought she was still alive, but by then she had passed on. But he felt her as a presence. And he could appreciate beauty in that little sanctuary in his own mind. And he could give thanks for the little graces. A few extra crumbs of bread. A few peas in the bottom of his thin soup. And he says that he came to the realization that everything can be taken away from us except for one thing. The last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. This is the ultimate spiritual freedom, to choose how we think and to choose our own way. And we know that for Viktor Frankl, it was the key to his survival. In the book that he has written about his experiences, has sold more than 12 million copies and has changed our world. So this is the spiritual freedom that we can trace back to our founding fathers as they so bravely made decisions that this will be a free nation where people choose whatever way they want to think or worship. We will not dictate that. We will not control that. We will leave it to them, with this great trust that as they did that, the highest and best would bubble up through us. And so on this 4th of July weekend, we give special thanks and appreciation, and we rejoice in the founding of our nation and the ways in which those fundamental foundational principles serve us even today. Truly, these individuals swung wide the doors of their hearts so that we could continue to seek and find, to learn and grow, to do our part to contribute to the upward evolution of human consciousness. They opened the way for us by our choices, through our choices, to create a unified, egalitarian, and peaceful world. Let's turn now to our time of meditation. Let's take a deep breath in, and as we release, let go in gratitude. Let go of anything interfering with our direct connection with spirit. We breathe in deeply, and as we release, we come to rest in that place of stillness and knowing deep within us. This place of peace, this inner sanctuary that is always there for us. Regardless of what is happening in our external lives, we can shift our awareness to return once again to this sanctuary within. As we breathe into this time and space, we allow a simple letting go. Letting go. Let go. Let go and open your heart wide. Let go and know that you are spirit and expression. And you are never alone. I invite you to settle into this place of deep peace and listen for what is yours to hear in this silence. We feel joy and gratitude bubbling up in us as we realize that we have everything we need within to live the life of our dreams. We have all the strength, all the wisdom, all the guidance, and all the love. We give thanks for all those who have come before us, who have paved the way for our understanding, our growth, our evolution. We hold high the banner of freedom, spiritual freedom and otherwise, knowing that as we grow and learn, we contribute to a better world. And for these many blessings, we're so grateful. And so it is. Amen. Theme of freedom. You remember that about a month or so ago, many of us wrote letters to inmates, people in our congregation who are currently incarcerated. It was a beautiful effort, a lot of love and a lot of caring poured into those notes. And we received a letter back from one of them, and I wanted to share a part of it with you. Hi, Paula and Unity Church. This is from Mike Bennett. Some of you may know Mike. Hi, Paula and Unity Church family. I wanted to write and thank you and the people of Unity for their kind thoughts and words of encouragement. I'm very happy to see the love my church family has taken the time to show me. The Christ light is still shining brightly at Unity. I miss my church family. I love you for loving me. I'm getting through this difficult time. I spend time reading great books. I have received some great books from many people. Some of the notes that I received reminded me that you are praying for my highest and best good, that there is more awesomeness ahead of me, that you are holding me in the light and love, affirming the Christ presence within me. Thank you for your love in my time of need. I will be returning to Unity in early February of 2016. I trust God will provide for you, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. Smile. It will improve your face value. Much love, Mike Bennett.